Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
He swings! Alexander Steen on his forehand hits a deep to left field! That's way back! Shoot, score! And it's a gunner! Bring out the Zamboni!
Oh, yeah!
This is a legendary KMOX Sports Open Line. Presented by Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford. Celebrating over 50 years serving St. Louis on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
And welcome to a very special post-round one edition of the Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line from the practice range at Bellerive Country Club, the site of the 100th PGA Championship. Round one just about in the books. The fans are filing out, and we are getting ready to talk a whole lot of golf over the next hour. Chris Raby with you. Dan Reardon is alongside as well. Ryan Schulte, Ben Boyd out here at the golf course with us. Mike Anderson is back in our KMOX studios. And Dan, I can't help but think as we sit up here and watch a couple of guys hit some range balls after their round, the sun is starting to peak behind the clouds and starting to go down. There's a nice breeze. It's downright pleasant out here right now at Bellerive.
Yeah, it must be late because Brandon DeChambeau has finally left the range.
Finally left the range.
I thought maybe he didn't get a room in town and he was staying on the range this weekend, but he's eventually gone.
It's pretty interesting to watch, and especially from our broadcast perch, watch how long some guys are out on the range, how the habits of some guys shape over the course of a career. Like, there are certain guys who will go out and just pound, pound, pound balls after a round. I know Tiger used to be like that. It's interesting, especially in a major championship, to watch guys hit balls for just hours after a round. I can't imagine that.
Well, I have a different question for you. So where we're situated is on the right side of the range. If the media was using the range, how many balls would they put in our position here?
Oh, we would not be on the air anymore.
Yeah, I think that's pretty safe. Although some of them don't have the length to get to us because we're about, I don't know, 75, 80 yards downrange. And when you shank them, they don't go very far.
It's great to have you with me, man. I've always enjoyed doing the Overhead Door Company of St. Louis Golf Show with you. And it's finally here. I'm almost like a little bummed that it's 25% of the way over,
just about. I just said that to Tom and Katie Kearney earlier, and that hit me last week. That hit me last week that I knew that I'd spent 7 years waiting for it to get here, and in a week's time, you know, I'm looking at essentially an empty calendar going forward. So, that's part of it. I am looking forward to the weekend, and particularly Sunday, seeing what kind of fireworks we can get out of Sunday's round. So I'm enjoying the moment. But, yeah. And more so, I think, because in today's world, major championships are booked literally decades apart now. You know, if you go into the media dining room and look at the future PGAs, you can go out to 2029 and find a PGA championship. So if you're talking about, you know, are they going to bring a PGA back to Bellerive? The question is, you know, what decade are we talking about? 2030? I mean, you can't even talk about what the golf course would be like. You can't even talk about what the distance will be like. You can't do any of that sort of thing. So that does bother me a little bit. The turnaround to that is, and I don't think I've ever had a chance to say this, on Saturday and Sunday, and I was, you know, like most people knowing the tournament's coming to town, I really, really paid attention to Firestone. And every time either the word Bellerive or St. Louis got mentioned, it was a little tingly sensation. It was a little, that's where I live. That kind of thing. You know, when I was extremely young, Chris, you won't relate to this, but I was extremely young, and the really older people in the audience will know this. If you went to a movie theater, and at some point in the movie, the word St. Louis was mentioned, people in the theater would cheer. Yeah, absolutely cheer. Didn't have to be positive, didn't have to be negative, just have to say St. Louis. And that was sort of, you know, that was sort of the feeling of watching them at Firestone on the weekend.
You know, it's interesting you say that because I want to talk over the course of this hour in our first segment about the tournament itself and the golf course and some of the logistics before we get into the leaderboard and some of the characters, the cast of characters, and what they did over the course of this first day and what we may expect coming up this weekend. But I think that over the last week or two, as there has been some criticism, rightly or wrongly, not just about the condition of the course, but some people saying, why is the 100th PGA Championship at Bellerive in St. Louis? Why is a PGA Championship in August at Bellerive in St. Louis? And then some of the questions started to percolate about the course. I think a lot of us have heard what the course has been dealing with or know what the course has been dealing with in terms of the greens, but I felt like there was, not a sense of St. Louisans taking offense or wanting to speak up for the course of the tournament, feeling like, you know, it's the big bad national media out to get St. Louis again. But, you know, we'll get to the course. In terms of the actual logistics, though, of the tournament, Dan, and, you know, just walking around this week and the last few days, save for the rain, which no one can control, everyone I've talked to from St. Louis, from out of town, what we've heard from players, what we've heard from caddies, what we've heard from, I think, other media members, is that so far, in terms of just logistically, point A to point B, the setup, Bellerive is a host club. Obviously, the sacrifices the membership made.
Enormous. Enormous.
It's all a home run so far. Fair?
Absolutely. I was just doing something with your friends from Memphis earlier, and I asked the question, and I mean, I've been, like you, very much involved in getting things on the air, not as much as you, but I have not heard anything negative from St. Louisans. You know,
I guess the one thing, when it rained the other day, they had to shut the shuttles down, which is their fault.
And they held those people in place, and they have a right to complain. But other than that one moment, which is naturally controlled, not controlled by the way the golf course was prepared or the way the tournament prepared or any of that kind of thing, I'm unaware of the fact that externally people are complaining about anything related to the golf course. Now, to go back to your other point about why Bellerive for the 100th PGA Championship, I'm going to give you a simple answer to the question. It's because...
And to be fair, I wasn't the one asking the question.
No, I'm not picking on you, Chris. I think it's a fair
question.
It's a fair question. But the answer to the question is, this is a national championship. It's not the national championship, the U.S. Open. It is a national championship. Now, I just talked about the fact that all these majors are booked a decade in advance. Okay? The USGA has mapped out all their U.S. Opens going forward. They are all on the East Coast, or they are on the West Coast. There are no U.S. Opens in the middle of the nation. Erin Hills was their token effort in that regard. So, and I asked this question when the PGA was in town on media day, and I asked them last year. The PGA is an organization that has always been committed to putting their championship in all areas of the country. You know, before the USGA discovered that there was a golf course at Chambers Bay, the PGA had gone out to Sahali and conducted a championship. They had gone to Los Angeles and played Riviera. They had gone to Southern Hills and played. They had gone to Atlanta and played.
Well, they were the first ones to go to Kohler, right?
They went to Kohler and played. They went to Medina and played. They've gone around the country. They've made sure that this championship goes to the various sections.
I love it.
That they have.
The PGA sections.
And
yep.
So if you're saying to me, why St. Louis, that has to be phrased in terms of what other Midwest center of the nation location, not should we be at Olympic Club in San Francisco, or should we be at Bethpage, where there will be next year on Long Island. I don't want to get political, but this is... It's still regarded by Eastern organizations as flyover country.
Yeah.
And so let's stage the events in areas where it's not just flyover country. And I can tell you there's a ton of writers who really think the USGA has done a disservice to the country when they have done this bracketing of coastal golf.
Well, and a lot of it's about TV and time zones too nowadays, right?
Absolutely. There's no question that they go to the West Coast because now
you're on prime time.
You can have in New York City, you can be watching the final of the U.S. Open at 9 p.m. Exactly right.
All right, we're going to talk about the golf course coming up. We're also going to get to the leaderboard, and you will hear some of what we have been working on and some of the folks that we have been sharing time with here at Belle Reve Country Club. That's all What's on Tap, brought to you by Midwest Money. Chris Raby and Dan Reardon with you. Our golf chats and our golf hour is always brought to you by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. Ryan Schulte is here at Belle Reve with us. So is Ben Boyd. Mike Anderson was here, and now he's back in our KMOX studios. And we are back after this on your home for the best coverage of the 100th PGA Championship, proudly in Middle America at Belle Reve Country Club, KMOX.
Now, back to the Dave Sinclair, Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line on your home of the St. Louis Blues, KMOX.
They're bumpy, for sure. They're quicker than they were in the practice rounds. They were saving them, but they're still on the slower side for what we normally play in week in and week out. The shorter putts are a little more interesting because they're a little chewed up. They're trying to give us some flat spots, around the hole. They're not really difficult pins and not really tucked, but still, it's they're tough sledding.
I didn't hear any of that from the players. That's from people that aren't playing in the tournament, that don't really, they haven't played the golf course, and they really don't know. You got to drive it on the fairway, and even when you do, with how soft the greens are and they're up on these little ledges, you got to be really dialed in with your mid and short irons. And if you are and you can put it on the fairway, you can shoot, 4, 5, 6 under par.
That is Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy after they played in the super group this morning, round one of the 100th PGA Championship at Belle Reve Country Club. Chris Raby and Dan Reardon with you. Our golf hours always brought to you by Overhead Door Company. Tiger Woods started 3 over through two, battles back to shoot even par. Rory McIlroy shoots even par on the day. Justin Thomas shoots 1 under despite being 3 under and shooting 2 over on the back. And Dan, before we get to the course, I just need to say, because I've never covered a major championship, I've been to major championships, but there's something unique about golf, and especially that post-round kind of gathering that today and this weekend is right adjacent to the pool here at Belle Reve Country Club, where there's a little podium and, reporters are literally standing 3 feet from some of the best golfers in the world and some of the most famous athletes in the world. And just standing there, hearing the candor and the personality and the charisma of some of the young guys, especially, just, man, if you weren't already encouraged about where the game is going, that's something that I had not seen firsthand until today.
Well,
and I know you've seen it time and time again, but I'm wondering how you've seen it evolve over the last 3, 4, 5 years.
Before I say that, I think Rory McIlroy should go into the prediction business, because 4, 5, and 6 under is exactly what's leading this championship.
Yeah.
Brandon Stone at 4, Ricky Fowler at 5, and Gary Woodland at 6.
Those guys are kind of smart, huh?
You know, Chris, this is unique. There's so many parts of this experience that are different for me as opposed to being on the road and covering championships.
Yeah.
So normally when the round is over, I'm getting my work done in the media center, and then I'm back to the hotel. The only place where that for a while wasn't true is I used to like to go out at Augusta after the round was over and just watch them cut the course. Now, that sounds like a strange thing to say, you're going to go out and watch people mow grass. And it is a strange thing. But it's actually a very orchestrated kind of event. It's an army of gang mowers going around the golf course.
I feel like I do that in the press box 5 hours before every Cardinals game.
And the setting of the sun coming down.
I bet it's amazing.
Golf courses are always best early and late, when the sun comes up and the shadows go across. And I used to go out and watch them set up the course at Augusta. And actually, on the weekend, you still can go out on Saturday or Sunday morning on the back nine at 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, and there's still cutting the cups and doing things like that because they have such a small field and late tee times. I do like that. I have not experienced this, you know, this gallery kind of environment that you're talking about where it is, you know, a little post-round. But I will tell you, you'll see this on Sunday night. There will be a festive atmosphere. And the other place that I've seen that, and that goes a little over the top, is if you're at a Ryder Cup when the U.S. has won.
It's like being in the locker room after the World Series, right?
Oh, yeah, but that's just from the player standpoint. No, I'm talking about from the gallery standpoint.
Oh.
Think of Mardi Gras on steroids, and that's what an American gallery is on Sunday night after a Ryder Cup win. I mean, they should have had fire hoses at Brookline when the U.S. won just to quiet those people down. And then the players become cheerleaders in that event.
You know, I was just thinking about the fact that this is somewhere that you and I played very, very recently and a club that we have both been to for many functions. And I was thinking about that during the media scrums outside of where the guys go in, which is right, you know, kind of behind the pool to sign their cards after the round. And the Bellerive members and their guests are up in kind of a little skybox, a little veranda, just kind of, next to the pool or whatever. And seeing the faces, especially of some of the younger people looking down and being like, Tiger Woods is standing there, and this is like where my swim team practices. It's just, another really cool thing for St. Louis,
Oh, absolutely.
Like, these guys are walking around, and, you know, I told, you know, Ben and Tom Ackerman today, I said, you know, I've covered a ton of stuff, and, you know, I'll find myself in a clubhouse or a locker room or whatever and kind of not even think anything about it, but today it's like, holy cow, Tiger Woods is spending the weekend in St. Louis, and, you know, he's 3 feet from us and 3 feet from that little kid in a Cardinals hat as he's going to get his ball in the right rough, and, you know, this and that, and it's just something that I'm not sure we're ever going to have again, which a little bittersweet. But, again, without getting too sentimental, before we get into the actual course, it's cool. And I hope everyone, you know, whether you're listening on Camo X, you're watching on TV, or you're out here this weekend, I hope you take a second to appreciate the fact that St. Louis, to this point, and I'm sure the rest of the weekend, has put a pretty incredible foot forward.
And the other thing I would like to know, and I don't know how to do it, you can obviously it'll show up there in social media. I'd like to know how many player sightings there are going on in the community.
Sure, absolutely.
After the round is over. Now, I you know,
Rory said if he wins, he'll take the Wanamaker out to the bars. Maybe he'll get to McGurk and Soulard and see Mike Anderson.
After tonight's round or after tomorrow's round.
Yeah, get a bite.
Particularly Saturday night when you have the shorter field. And I'm not asking about Tiger. I'm not asking about Rory. But, I mean, I walked by Adam Scott on the way over here. You could go through a long list of players. And all of them don't already go back to the house they've rented or back to the hotel.
Or maybe see someone with their kids at the zoo or at Forest Park.
Dinner. Are there players going out to Annie Gunn's after tonight's round or the next round? And I'm not promoting one restaurant. But I would be curious to see how many sightings there are of fans seeing professional golfers out and about in the community.
Well, tweet us. Dan Reardon's on Twitter now. How about that?
Yeah, I know.
Do you remember your handle?
It's Dan Reardon 13.
Give him a follow, Dan Reardon 13. I'm going to do it right now. Let's talk about the course, the actual comments from Rory and Tiger. We'll start with the course itself. The setup, how it's playing, the number of players under par. Are you surprised where we sit after first-round play?
Other than maybe a Gary Woodland, no, there's nothing about the first round that has surprised me in terms of scoring. I was trying to see what we ended up with, and we're still flirting with.
48?
Yeah, we were at 47. The record is, I believe, and I'm just handicapping what I know about the stroke play championships and scoring records. I think they're all modern, and I know that Tiger at Valhalla went really deep, and the rest of the field followed him. But there were only like 21, 22 players who broke par the first day at Valhalla. And then the Whistling Straits, where Jason Day set the current record for the PGA Championship, there were 43 rounds at under par. And so if they finish, and they were sitting at 47 or 46, if they finish at that number, this will, and it's scoring average, far and away, this will be the lowest opening round in a PGA Championship. Now, is that a bad thing? Not a bad thing. Probably not the happiest thing for members. And I've said this to a couple of people. And it's not just the number. You know, it's just not that number. It's that this is a par 70 course. And I think when we did this earlier, it's if you have 46 guys shoot under par here, when you look at that first day leaderboard, they're all going to be rounds in the 60s. You know?
Yeah.
If this is a par 71 course, par 72 course, it wouldn't look as bad. So in that regard, you know, I'm a little disappointed, but we haven't seen I was talking to Gary Van Sickle earlier, and Gary said, and I don't know who the player made the comment, they said, this is an easy golf course to make a lot of pars. It's not an easy golf course to make a lot of birdies.
Well, especially with just two par fives. And
yeah, yeah.
Jordan Spieth bogeyed one of those par fives, number 17, and I see him, Dan. He was taking dead aim at us. I don't know if it was an alignment drill or what.
He shot one over.
Yeah, he's on the left side of the practice range right now. How about the greens? And in terms of scoring, I think that when we talked this week about the rain and about the conditions, we thought guys would be firing darts, the greens would be slow. Maybe that would mitigate the advantage for some of the better putters. But Tiger said they're a little bumpy, and we saw some guys miss some uncharacteristic putts. Do you have a take through this point on the greens, or was it just round one?
Ricky Fowler, I asked him about three putting. Ricky Fowler said that he thought the greens were getting chewed up because they were soft and all the play in the morning, and the guys in the afternoon would struggle. As it turned out, we had very good scoring in the afternoon. You know, the top half, top three names on our leaderboard, two of the top three names are from the afternoon round. So it didn't get harder in the afternoon as Ricky thought might be the case. You know, we do have rain, a possibility of rain tomorrow, with possibility of rain on Saturday. This has nothing to do with scoring, but I'll say this: because of the rain, the greens look really nice on television. They don't look beat up. The aerials, you know, at a major championship, they cut these things down so severely, and when you get the aerial shots of the greens, they look very brown, even when they're not brown, because they're when you cut on that chart, you can see the dirt. Right now, as wet as they are, the greens look fine. They're not playing that way necessarily, but they're not, you know, if the greens were perfect and they were wet, I think we might see 62s and 63s out here. But there's just enough danger in there, just enough unpredictability. Tiger's right. It's not the 30-footer that's hard on this green. It's the 5-footer. It's the 5-footer that, you know, we still have guys playing with real steel spikes on. There are spike marks still out on these greens. And when they're wet and when they're soft and when they're not particularly healthy and lush, you can get a little bit of a roll of the dice on those short putts. And that was why I asked Ricky the question. I said, you know, you have one of the better three-point avoidance statistics on tour. Is that a more important factor, not only because of the big greens here, but also because of the condition of the greens here? And he thought that was an issue.
Speaking of which, not necessarily a spike mark on the greens, but Justin Thomas said he was in a pitch mark in the bunker on number 9.
Yeah, Mark Reardon mentioned that.
That somebody didn't rake.
It's not Bill Reeves' fault.
I'm just saying, that's never heard of that. And
keep in mind, he went out at 8:23 this morning, so there weren't a lot of players that went through before him.
I might have to try and figure out who the guilty party was. All right, we're going to take a break. We will get to the specific leaderboard and talk about some of the main party participants. Your leader is Gary Woodland at 6 under par. How about that? As he is one better than Ricky Fowler. We'll also hear from a local guy with Tom Ackerman. That's all coming up. It is our Overhead Door Company of St. Louis PGA Championship coverage. Chris Raby and Dan Reardon with you, and we're back after this on KMOX.
Now, back to the Dave Sinclair Lincoln and Ford Sports Open Line.
They got good hitters.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Can we go back?
Welcome back. We are sharing a driving range with Jordan Spieth. How many times do you think someone will be able to say that, Dan Reardon, that is not a professional golfer? We are literally, what, the only folks on the range? It's you, me, Ben Boyd, Michael Greller, and Jordan Spieth.
There you go.
So it's just the five of us hanging out. And we
are not working on our game. We are talking about round one of the
PGA Championship.
And by
the way, if we all played, I think he would win.
Well, you, me, Ben, Greller could scramble, and then we could get about two shots a hole, and then maybe only lose by 18.
I think our only chance would be if Ben kneecapped him and we went from there.
Look at him. He's been known to do that. Let's talk about a St. Louis Inn before we get to some of the rest of the leaderboard. And what a story. You talk about club pros. Michael Block, a 5-over 75 today, tied for 133rd with Tom Ackerman.
Michael Block joins us on KMOX at 6:50 this morning. You hit the first shot in the PGA Championship. How did that feel to the St. Louis Inn?
You know, it's 100% me living on some clouds, living the dream right now. Having that honor was something I thought I would never, ever, ever get. And to have that honor was amazing, and it actually turned out good. I didn't top it or hit any duck hooks or anything like that. I actually piped it down the middle. I did go with the driver rather than the 3-wood just because the head's a lot bigger.
You did pipe it down the middle, and the crowd gave you a great acknowledgement, and that was a driver, wasn't it?
It was a driver. 3-wood was the plan all week, right? I mean, I never hit a driver one time on that tee box. And while I was warming up, I was a little nervous, and I wasn't hitting my 3-wood that good, and I was hitting my driver good, so I'm like, I got on the first tee. And normally, you know, with your caddy, you're like, hey, we're going with our game plan. I'm like, I'm sorry, but I'm hitting driver right now.
So did you catch your breath walking down the fairway? What was that walk like?
It felt so good. Honestly, the rest of the day, I felt very comfortable. I mean, I felt remarkably comfortable all day long out there. My pairings couldn't be any better. Fox and Pepperell are absolutely two of the nicest gentlemen in the world, and they treated me like one of them, and it was fantastic.
What was the response like from family and friends just this entire week, and how many were out there?
It's been unbelievable. I have a lot of new friends out here, and my son, that whole story with my son, I keep on walking down the fairways, and he's getting autographs, and he's doing interviews as I'm walking down the fairway, which is just too funny to me. But, yeah, it's been an amazing experience, and I don't want it to end.
I've been out here a couple times where people said, is that him? Is that Dylan? Is that?
He's more famous than I am, I promise you that. Yesterday, Jason Day was walking by, and he just said hi to me and my family, and then all of a sudden he turns around and he goes, do you want to be on my bag? To Dylan. And, I mean, that's when I really was like, wow, J-Day knows my boys. So that's pretty cool.
That is cool. So Parkway Central's just a few miles from here. I mean, just put that in perspective.
Yeah, I mean, geez, Parkway Central's, a mile and a half from here, I think, right down the Dew. And, I mean, it's never in my life, like when I did come here in 1992 to watch the PGA. There is no way in the world I would have thought I would be here because I didn't even play high school golf. We were talking about walking down the fairways. I'm going, the guys on the college or on the high school golf team must be like, why didn't he play on the team? Because I only played my senior year because I was playing tennis instead. So, it's pretty funny. But it works out beautifully. Thank you.
And then overall, just year-round and looking ahead to tomorrow, what would you want to improve from
easy.
Today?
That's my irons. My mid-irons killed me. I'm in the middle of the fairway with 8 irons and I'm missing the greens, putting myself in tough spots, you know. The driver was fine. The putter, you know, I had a couple 3-putts, but whatever, you know, that happens. It's just the mid-irons. I'm going to go work on them here after lunch and get it dialed in. I'm going to go 500 tomorrow and make the cut.
Go get them tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
Michael Block on KMOX.
Thank you.
What an attitude. Isn't that what it's all about? That's great.
Well, I mean, and they've fought for years
to
keep the club pros in the mix. It used to be more, and they've cut it down every year. This is their championship that should never go away, and there was a consideration at one time that it should go away. Does it reduce the strength of the field? Yeah, I guess if you think the 156th player in the field is going to win the PGA Championship, which sort of John Daly did, but no, I mean it's
157, right? First alternate.
Yeah. I literally was the only person that talked to John Daly after his opening round on Thursday at Crooked Stick, and it was only because I knew John from the Gateway section. I'd covered him, and I actually talked to him.
And you had a light,
huh?
No, had a light on you.
No, but I did visit with him at the U.S. Open at Oak Hill about a year earlier, and he finished in total darkness. But as I said, this belongs to the club pros. It's their event, and they have every right to be there. And for a long time, we had a St. Louis and Bobby Gauss, who's played in I think 5 PGA Championships because he qualified. So. Good for Michael Block.
He said he's 5-over right now. He's going to shoot 500 tomorrow and make the cut. You think that does it? Even par?
Oh, even par. Even par will get you in, yeah. I think. It does look like, though, we are going to, and again, I'm saying unofficial because I haven't been able to track the actual number, but we're right now sitting at 46 players under par. The man on the bubble is Chris Kirk. He is one under through 15. And then when I look at if there's anybody that can come down from even to one under, you have Chris Stroud who could get to one under. And if even if both of those numbers change, we're still going to beat that number of 43, which is my unofficial record for opening rounds, and that took place at Whistling Straits. Whistling Straits when Jason Day won.
All right, we've talked distance, we've talked equipment. Tell me about the conversation you had that we're going to hear a little bit of right now.
Well, one of the best writers in the game of golf for years has been Jaime Diaz. He used to be with New York Times. He's been with Golf Digest, currently with Golf Digest. And Jaime is a really good player, and so whenever Jaime and I would talk, we'd like to talk about golf as a game. And I talked to him today, and I said, Jaime, you know, well, you hear the question. I said, do we have a reason to be concerned about distance in the game? It's, you know, we did the thing with Ran Jarrett when we were doing the golf show. This is Jaime talking about whether there is a problem or not.
Does Jaime Diaz think that we will ever resolve whether we have a controversy involving distance in the game?
I think it'll be resolved, and I think it needs to be resolved. At some point, you run out of real estate. And if you want to test, if you want the game to be a test of skill at the highest level and be appreciated as such, you need a suitable arena. I think it's getting to the point where the arena is shrinking to where the highest skills are not being tested. Now, that's okay. Most people who aren't purists or close observers or golf nerds don't care that much yet. But I think if the game starts to get looking like it's, you know, in baseball, it's the America's game. People follow it. People started realizing it's 15, you know, we go in streaks where it's all pitching and sometimes it's all hitting. I recall the time when, the period when, and this is before the steroid era, where you started seeing the ball jumping out and second baseman hitting 45 home runs. And there was a sense that it's getting too easy here. And of course, baseball can regulate the game without telling anybody what they do. They can juice the ball or soften the ball, or lower the mound, or change the strike zone, or make adjustments within the game to put the competitive balance back. And I think golf's slightly out of competitive balance, and it's only going to get worse in terms of how far the ball travels. And you know, there's a big controversy: is it the ball? Is it the equipment? Is it the athletes? Is it the agronomy? Who cares? It's going too far. There's too many driver wedge holes. There's too many iron wedge holes, for my taste. And you know, I'll concede that maybe my taste is a little oversensitive to what I would like to see as far as, you know, the pure test. I like the U.S. Open and the USGA's philosophy about let's make it really hard so that we know who actually could handle the examination that golf should be. But that's not always the most appealing thing to watch either. So I concede on that point. But I honestly believe that golf will diminish as the great sport that it is, because it is considered the most difficult sport. That's one of its allures. It's like it's so hard to hit this little ball so far to this little target, and when they do it, it's a thrill. If it starts looking like it's easy, it's going to diminish it, and the arena has to be the first place that ensures that the game is difficult. And right now the arena is starting to decline in terms of difficulty, and I think the solution will be some sort of adjustment to distance.
Adjustment. That's, I think, the key word.
Yeah, and as I said, you go back, and I think the station podcast, the stuff we did, go back and hear from Ran Jarrett. As we wrap it up, I want to throw in one observation about Tiger Woods, who shot even par today. And here's my observation. And believe me, I'm very pro-Tiger. If he would win this week, it'd be great for St. Louis. It would be great for the game of golf. It would be great for sports. But people talking about Tiger shooting even par today, I think that's a little bit like saying Dan Reardon gets around well for his age. If you take the name Woods off the front of the round and put any other name on that front of the round, what's your comment going to be?
Well, would they also start three over through two and then have a miraculous par save to get the round going, or would it be, you know, 16 pars, one bogey, and one birdie?
Good for him, but I just mentioned the name Chris Stroud. Are we going to say the same thing about Chris Stroud's round if he finishes
it even
par?
No, because I think that a lot of people in our last 30 seconds on the second or third hole were saying, yep, he's tired, he's done, this is too much. And more than anything, I think it's great for the city if he makes the cut.
Oh, absolutely. I'm on board with that. I just think that we are too obsessed with.
No, you're probably right.
What measure of success? If he wins the championship, give him credit. If he shoots even par and he's sitting in 40, tied for 47th, record.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay.
That's Dan Reardon. Thanks to Ryan Schulte, Ben Boyd, Mike Anderson. I'm Chris Raby. This has been Live, the PGA Championship, always brought to you by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis, on your home for the best coverage from Belle Reve, KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.